This is CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver. And for those of you listening in Vancouver, in the Lower Mainland, down in Washington State, over on the islands, and over the internet from all over the world, this is part of our fundraising week here on CFRO. We'll be asking you to join us to become a member. It costs $50 for an annual membership, or $25 if you're on a fixed income. There are other plans where you can pay so much a month. I'll be telling you about that as the show progresses. But don't worry about it. It's not a lot of commercials. We'll be asking for your help to support Radio EcoShock, but we'll also be providing you with a lot of, well, really hot information. Let's see what we've got coming for this week's show. Today we're going to look at coal in the United States. If all the new coal plants that are planned to be built or actually built, well, we can kiss the climate goodbye. So who's fighting that? Well, the Rainforest Action Network is one group, and we'll be talking to Bill Barkley, one of their senior campaigners, to see what can be done and what is being done to stop the construction of new coal plants in the United States. We'll also be having a look at the second working group of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. What a mouthful that is. The IPCC has a second working group, which is assigned to look at the impacts of climate change, and they break it down into different parts of the world, and they've issued a 67 or so page report on North America, but in fact only about 36 pages of that are the text, the rest are all footnotes and sources, and I'm going to tell you where you can find that and a little bit about it and read you a few of the key paragraphs today. And then we're also going to be having a look at, well, a couple of solutions. Earth Day comes around once a year. We've got to look at some of the positive things that are being said. We've got a couple of quotes from Al Gore and from George Monbiot, and just for fun and to have them get into the brain, we've set some music behind them. That and a bit of music and perhaps, well, an excerpt from my new feature on climate scams, which you can also download from our website, 7 Climate Scams to Avoid, or the 7 Roads to Hell, I call it. And we'll get a little bit of that into the program again today. So let's get rolling with Radio EcoShock. We'll start off with the coal and a quote from Governor Schwarzenegger.
We don't buy any more electricity from anyone that gets it from coal. We have changed that. So we have sent a very clear signal to the rest of the country. Don't try to produce electricity for us and pollute the world. Just, you know, do it the clean way, and we will buy electricity, even though we're always in need of electricity in California, as you remember, the blackouts and the brownouts and all of those things. But we refuse to buy electricity from anyone that is producing electricity with regular coal.
That's the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, giving an opening address at Georgetown University on April the 11th, 2007. On past Radio EcoShock shows, I've described how a binge of new coal plant construction around the world threatens the world's climate. We just can't let this happen, and today we have one of America's most knowledgeable coal campaigners, Bill Barkley from the Rainforest Action Network, known as RAN. Now, Bill, I'm all steamed up after reading an article in the Christian Science Monitor on March 22nd. Mm-hmm. It describes the global boom in coal power and the coming clouds of emissions. And I was surprised to learn the big action wasn't just in China, but in the United States. Can you tell us what is going on there?
Well, that's right. There's a lot of proposals to build new coal-powered plants here in the U.S., and in fact, there'd be about a 14-fold increase in the number of coal plants that are built over the next 5 years under current proposals. Well, coal is still very cheap, and a lot of people see big money to be made. Because right now we don't have any regulation. There's no price on carbon. There's no price against pollution. And so a lot of people who are thinking first and foremost about the money are pushing ahead with these very dirty power plants.
Can you tell us about the recent Step It Up anti-coal action and then maybe move into a description of RAN's program to stop this catastrophe?
Sure. Well, as you know, on Saturday, more than 1,300 different activities around the U.S., and I believe some in Canada as well, calling on the government to commit to an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, which is what the scientists are telling us we need to do in order to prevent catastrophic climate change. Now, one of the most important things that we focus on is coal power plants, and we need to have a moratorium on new coal plants if we have any chance of meeting these kinds of objectives. So Rand, we have been focusing a lot on the role of the big banks in New York, but also elsewhere around the world, including Canada, that are providing the funding that's necessary for these coal plants to be built. And we believe that the banks should also join this moratorium call and not be providing financing for something that is obviously so wrong for our climate and for the planet.
Well, it seems to me if you're a bank, a lot of your money is in mortgages, and it may be on properties along the coastlines, which are going to suffer much of the damage. Surely you can see that in the future it's going to cost you billions, if not put you out of business.
Well, it's quite clearly the case that if we don't address climate change, it's going to cost quite a lot of money. Some economists who have looked at this recently say that if we fail to address climate change, the cost to the global economy could be greater than both world wars and the Great Depression combined. And on the other hand, if we start investing now in low carbon efficient technologies, it will be much cheaper and we can avoid the worst effects. Banks often are on a very short time window, and so they're not looking far ahead as they should be. And this is one of the prime concerns. This is why we're raising the issue so strongly with the banks. They really do have a long-term interest in making sure that climate change is addressed because it has such widespread effects on the economy. But they need to get policies in place that align that objective with what they're doing today.
So are you also in any dialogue with the coal companies themselves?
We haven't been talking to the coal companies directly so much. We have done some work in Appalachia. The coal production down there is by mountaintop removal, which is a very destructive way to get at coal. They blow the tops off of mountains. They've done this over 1 million acres now. The waste material goes into streams and watersheds. A lot of community opposition to this. A very, very, very destructive way of getting coal. And a lot of people are opposed to that. We've been talking to some of the banks that are financing this very destructive way of removing coal. But we've been talking mostly with the banks and not so much directly with the utilities or the coal companies. Other groups are talking more directly with them.
What is your take on carbon sequestration? Could we accept new coal plants if the carbon was captured and put underground?
Well, the scientists are saying that that should be the only basis from a climate perspective in which you could accept new coal plants. We are skeptical. It's very expensive. It's an untested technology. There is no commercial power plant in the world, that's doing full carbon capture and sequestration. And it's not likely to be happen in the next 5 years. So it really brings us back to the point that in the next 5 years, what we have to do is have a moratorium on new coal construction.
So none of these plants, and I've heard figures up to as many as 150 for the United States, none of those were going to put in carbon capture or sequestration, are they?
They talk about it, but none of them are planning to do it within the next 5 years. That's correct.
And Canada talks a great game about coal. Ontario keeps promising to shut down its plants, but then it doesn't. And British Columbia, where I live, is shipping out trainloads of the stuff and plans to expand its coal shipping ports. What can you tell us about the Canadian coal connection?
Well, I mean, we were pleased to see that some of the coal plants have been shut down in British Columbia, or actually they were prevented from being built, and also that the plans to close them in Ontario, those are steps in the right direction. But clearly, if you're still mining a lot of coal and feeding the problem elsewhere, that's not helping. Canada really has to make some stronger efforts to meet its Kyoto commitments. And it's not just the coal sector. Obviously, tar sands are also a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, a very dirty source of oil. And in both cases, we're talking to the Canadian banks and saying, you have to deal with this issue. You have to get a climate policy in place that really accounts for the greenhouse gas emissions associated with your financing and start putting your financing into investing into a low-carbon economy and phasing out of these very dirty technologies like coal and dirty forms of tar sands extraction.
And we don't really have 20 years to think about it, do we?
No. You know, some of the scientists here, like Jim Hansen from NASA, he's very respected. He says we only have 10 years to get our greenhouse gas emissions under control, to level them out. And if we don't do that, his big concern is that the ecosystems of the north, the permafrost areas, start melting and emitting methane, and we get into a kind of runaway train situation, uncontrollable climate change. And we really have to be, we don't want to cross those thresholds. It means we really have to start controlling our greenhouse gas emissions very aggressively starting now. And that's why we're focusing on coal.
A couple of weeks ago, I talked with Steve Schallhorn, the executive director of Greenpeace Australia, the world's biggest coal exporting country. And they're being hit very hard by climate change, and they know it. Mm-hmm. Some people expect the current Australian government will fall just because of its failure to deal with climate and coal. And just like in America, well, just this week, the state governments in Australia passed more stringent laws than the federal government. What's happening at the state level in America? Are you getting more support there than you would from Washington?
Absolutely. The states are stepping forward and taking action. California's passed a very leading greenhouse gas a climate bill, and other states are joining in. I think for the first time, now with the Democrats in control in Washington, there are climate bills that are getting serious hearings and will be coming forward. But, of course, in the White House, I'm sure there will be opposition to anything that is consistent with the science. That's been their pattern in the past. Again, what's needed is an 80% reduction by 2050 of greenhouse gas emissions from the U.S., and that's an important trajectory to get on. And there's only a few bills that are being proposed that do meet that standard. But whether or not they'll make it to the White House and the White House would sign it is quite another question.
Well, there's been a long tradition of Peabody coal and electric utility payoffs to the major political parties in Washington. Is the Bush government helping this new coal plant expansion?
Well, they are certainly not stepping it up to slow it down.
I wonder if the Supreme Court ruling will help you out a little bit.
Well, you know, all these developments are positive, and they will help out. Again, part of the issue is we need to get this moratorium in place now. There's no point in going forward and financing new coal while one concern that that we have is that some of these companies might try to do what's called grandfathering in their emissions. So build as quickly as they can now coal plants while there's no regulation, and then when the regulation comes, they say, "Well, we are already we have producing this much greenhouse gases, and so we want to grandfather in the right to continue to do that as our base level." So. There's kind of a bit of a rush right now by some companies, I think unscrupulous companies, that are trying to build new coal plants very quickly so they can grandfather in those emissions before federal regulations take place. And again, what we're saying to the banks and everybody else is this is not acceptable.
Well, if America and its wealth and technical know-how just blunders into a new coal age, our kids and grandchildren are doomed to an ugly climate for hundreds or thousands of years. Do you see young people, particularly in the college, waking up to the fact that big corporations and the stock companies are actively destroying their future?
Absolutely. I think there's a growing recognition that we need to act, and the future of the planet is very much at stake. And we're certainly working, campuses and communities across the country, to try to help that process and get more folks engaged.
This is a big worry to me. You know, I sort of feel, well, where is the younger generation? It is their future. Looking back to the 60s when you had hundreds of thousands or millions in the streets, and yet here the planet is under threat and we haven't seen it yet.
I think it's coming. I think, you know, there's been a tremendous shift in public perceptions and public concern about climate change, which is very positive. It's risen to the top of the agenda for many people, not only in the United States, but also in Canada and in other parts of the world. So I think this is all coming, and people are starting to wake up to this and take it very seriously. So I'm not as discouraged about that. Obviously, we need to see more visible visibility around this issue and visible expressions of concern is very important. But the public is waking up to this issue, I think.
Yeah, many of my listeners aren't rich enough to cancel their Morgan Stanley accounts, but I'm thinking most of us are linked to these big financial institutions through our retirement savings plans and our banks. Can we become activists?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very important. Everybody has bank accounts, and you know, this is one of the things we're talking to the Canadian banks. We're asking Canadian banks to develop climate policies covering their financing, and you know, this is where public can really help a lot. If you also can send letters of concern, or express this concern to your bank, tell them that you expect them to develop climate policies that cover their financing and to stop funding new coal plants.
What's next for RAN on this coal campaign? What is next for RAN on this coal campaign?
Well, we're continuing to follow different proposals that are coming forward, looking at the financial relationships, working with grassroots groups, local community groups, and others that are working to prevent them from getting built. And we're just going to continue doing this.
And you have had some successes with some of the big financial institutions, haven't you?
Well, we certainly have raised the concern, and I think there is some heightened awareness in some parts of these banks. There was a very significant case in Texas, a Texas utility called TXU, that wanted to build 11 new coal-fired power plants, whose greenhouse gas emissions, by the way, would be twice the size of Canada's Kyoto reduction commitment. So quite a big, big new source of greenhouse gas emissions from one project. And, of course, they were inviting Canadian banks to participate and help fund this. And we wrote to banks all around the world, including Canadian banks, and I think they did. There's a heightened awareness of the issues now, but there's still not the policies in place that can help guide the banks going forward.
Is there anything else you want our listeners to know?
We encourage everybody to get involved on this issue, on climate issue and in no new coal. And if you want further information, please come to our website at www.ran.org. That's RAN.org.
Well, I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We've been talking with Bill Barkley of the Rainforest Action Network about the threat of new coal plant building in America, and as Bill says, you can find a lot more at the RAN website at www.ran.org. Thanks, Bill, and keep on fighting it.
Thank you very much.
I know some of you have become regular listeners to Radio EcoShock, and I really, really appreciate that. I'm getting some very positive email back from you, and I always do love to hear from you. You can write to me at radio@ecoshock.org. But this is the time of the year when we have to pay the bills for the transmitter, for the part-time skeleton staff that we have here that run the station. We've got to buy all the supplies, and, you know, it costs money to run a radio station. And also, this is a time of year when you show your support for this show. Without it, we really can't go on. So we're asking you to call 684-8494. That's area code 604-684-8494. If you want to write that down, 684-8494, and become a member. And when you call up, someone will take your call, or I may even be able to take your call, and we will explain to you your various payment options. It's pretty easy. You can do it over the phone if you like, or you can arrange to send us in a check. Really what you're doing is making a pledge at this point and showing your support for Radio EcoShock and for the station CFRO 102.7 FM, really a jewel of a co-op community-owned radio station in the great city of Vancouver and serving the West Coast and the world. And we do have listeners from all over the world. So to get a membership, well, there are some benefits. If you're living in Vancouver, you can get 10% off on a lot of different stores that we support each other. You can become a voting member at our AGM. You can get a lot of free training. It's really surprising. You could just come down to the station and take one of our orientations and see what it looks like. But if you want to go further, periodically we have these things where you can learn how to use quite expensive software, like Pro Tools, for example, how to produce your own program or get involved with someone else who's producing one already and get yourself on the air. So you have the choice. You can, if you're really busy already, you're working a job, you're raising a family, you can't do much more, but you want to help Radio EcoShock tell people about the environmental crisis that we have, then you can just be a member and we'll be really grateful for that. But if you want to go further, there are other opportunities for you, but you must be a member in order to participate. And we'll also send you 4 times a year a reader's guide, a program guide, which is quite handy because there's such a wide variety of programming on this station, and you really want to know when your favorite show is coming up and also what other things are available to you. So give us a call at 684-8494. That's area code 604-8494 to become a member. And I'm asking now for your support on Radio EcoShock. We don't have commercials through the rest of the year. We just fill it up with as much speeches and scientific reports and news items and a little bit of fun and music as we can. But right now, we really have to ask for your support for Radio EcoShock and CFRO Co-op Radio. So call in 604-8494 and I will take your call. Thank you. Let's get back to the show. Say, can I interest you in the future of your continent? It seems strange to feel the need to ask that question. Of all the cheap magazines and diet columns people will read, hardly anyone will bother with 36 pages about the climate threat to North America. It took a lot of scientists culling results from hundreds of millions of dollars worth of research in the last 5 years to get the picture of what weird weather will do to North America. Then government hacks from big polluters like Saudi Arabia, China, Russia, and America softened it up and tossed in less certainty, just as surely as the Bush White House censored its own scientists. But this is the age of the Internet, when information flies faster than control. Leaked copies of the final review document, written by the real scientists, have popped up. If you Google the following words, you'll likely find it for yourself. IPCC, Fourth Assessment, Final Draft. I'm going to assume that you do care, so let's take a look. There were 2 coordinating lead authors, one from the United States, the other from Canada. In fact, all the authors and review editors are balanced half and half between the U.S. and Canada. Each statement is followed by their level of confidence, how true they think it is. We know they are funded by the governments or major universities, who are also funded by the governments. So even this uncensored report may present a low estimate of the dangers we face. I sure hope so, because this is one big warning. They begin by saying, quote, North America has experienced locally severe economic damage, plus substantial ecosystem, social, and cultural disruption from recent weather-related extremes, including hurricanes, other severe storms, floods, droughts, heat waves, and wildfires. Very high confidence. End quote. We're already feeling the impact of climate change, but you knew that. Of course, we think with our wealth and technology we can adapt to anything. Most of us still believe that, even after Katrina wiped out part of New Orleans. When it comes to our response to global warming, the authors of the second working group have to dance around a difficult social reality. The vulnerability of North America depends on the effectiveness and timing of adaptation, and the distribution of coping capacity, which varies spatially and among sectors. Very high confidence. Although North America has considerable adaptive capacity, actual practices have not always protected people and property from adverse impacts of climate variability and extreme weather events. Especially vulnerable groups include indigenous peoples and those who are socially or economically disadvantaged. Traditions and institutions in North America have encouraged a decentralized response framework, where adaptation tends to be reactive, unevenly distributed, and focused on coping with rather than preventing problems. Mainstreaming climate change issues into decision-making is a key prerequisite for sustainability. End quote. So, we could deal with it up to a point, but our history and economic system may play against us. Aboriginal people and the poor will be the first victims, as the Inuit in the North already are. And as the scientists say, our federal governments tend to react after the fact. They haven't begun to act to protect us from the worst impacts of an unstable climate. In just one minor example, municipalities and districts continue to issue building permits along oceanfront that we know will be buffeted by storms, high tides, and seas stronger and higher than we have ever seen. Then it will be flooded. Likewise, our dikes and shoreline defenses have been allowed to languish, unfunded. And those are minor examples compared to the possible impacts on industrial agriculture and our food supply, or the new health hazards. How many doctors in Canada could recognize the tropical diseases coming our way or already arrived, such as West Nile virus or the fungus that killed several on Vancouver Island? The authors then turn to the problems of the coasts. In addition to the human impacts, consider this. When sea level rises, the critical natural marsh habitats would normally retreat further back into the land. But now, as cities sprawl for hundreds of miles and homes line the coasts, there is nowhere for this entire ecosystem to go. The authors talk about fixed structures blocking landward migration. The marshlands are one of the richest in life forms. They serve as nature's water filters. They buffer storm surges and welcome traveling birds, but the combination of rising seas and human encroachment may end all that in many places. Meanwhile, North America will join many other parts of the world in a competition for water, they say. Quote, climate change will constrain North America's already heavily utilized water resources, increasing competition among agricultural, municipal, industrial, and ecological uses. Very high confidence. Rising temperatures will diminish snowpack and increase evaporation, affecting seasonal availability of water. Higher demand from economic development, agriculture, and population growth will further limit surface and groundwater availability. End quote. One of those stress points will be the Great Lakes. A combination of reduced winter runoff, increased evaporation in the heat, and expanding human needs may well drain portions of the Great Lakes water system. Plenty of Americans are already talking of gigantic diversions of water from the Great Lakes to the Central Plains and even to the American Southwest. There in Arizona, California, Colorado, and more, scientists are already predicting a sustained drought lasting hundreds of years. Yet populations are still flocking to Phoenix and Las Vegas, as though the fossil water tables were not dropping out of sight, as though the Colorado River is not already drained dry before it reaches the sea. In the West, the whole agricultural system and rivers of the prairies depend upon snowmelt and glacier melt from the Rocky Mountains. But those glaciers are melting as human-induced climate change progresses. And then what? The authors also point out that some of our clean energy from hydroelectric dams may be hit hard as water becomes more scarce. Carrying on, quote, climate change impacts on infrastructure and human health and safety in urban centers will be compounded by aging infrastructure, maladapted urban form and building stock, urban heat islands, air pollution, population growth, and an aging population. Very high confidence. That was followed by this. Without increased investments in countermeasures, hot temperatures and extreme weather are likely to cause increased adverse health impacts from heat-related mortality, pollution, storm-related fatalities and injuries, and infectious diseases. Very high confidence. End quote. That doesn't sound like a good future, and that is what our best scientists say in public. What some say in private is downright scary. But one of the continuing points of this second working group, which focused on the impacts of climate change, is the need and opportunity to adapt ourselves starting now. In fact, there is surprisingly little in this report about how to prevent runaway climate change. They know the Earth's climate has already shifted and concentrate on telling us to get ready while we still can. Enough from me. I'm just going to read you a few more paragraphs from the opening of the report. Historically important countermeasures include early warning and surveillance systems, air conditioning, access to health care, public education, vector control, infrastructure standards, and air quality management. Climate change could more than double the potential for increased heat wave deaths in urban areas. waterborne diseases, and degraded water quality are very likely to increase with more heavy precipitation. Warming and climate extremes are likely to increase respiratory illness, including exposure to pollen and ozone. Climate change is likely to increase risk and geographic spread of vector-borne infectious diseases, including Lyme disease and the West Nile virus. Disturbances like wildfire and insect outbreaks are increasing and are likely to intensify in a warmer future with drier soils and longer growing seasons. Very high confidence. Although recent climate trends have increased vegetation growth, continuing increases in disturbances are likely to limit carbon storage, facilitate invasive species, and disrupt ecosystem services. Over the 21st century, pressure for species to shift north and to higher elevations will fundamentally rearrange North American ecosystems. Differential capacities for range shifts and constraints from development, habitat fragmentation, invasive species, and broken ecological connections will alter ecosystem structure, function, and services, end quote. Yes, it's all going to change. Our whole ecosystem is going to change, and it's already underway. This is such strong stuff. I feel like I should just read that over again. If you would like to read it again, you can download this report in full from the Radio EcoShock website at www.ecoshock.org. Look for our audio on demand menu and choose climate change. I've put the unedited scientist's report on North America there. And the report looks like it is more than 60 pages, but in reality, everything past page 37 is a listing of sources for their conclusions and for each one of their statements, so you can follow up the issues that interest you. There are so many too serious impacts to list here. Just consider the human migration as heat and drought rearrange the climate of Mexico and Central or South America. In fact, people will get to North America, especially to the northern states and Canada, from all over the world, however they can. Or consider the phrase, interconnected economies. Yes, indeed. Globalization means that when China suffers, our production of goods almost stops. Thousands of tropical products and the industries built on them may disappear. Tourism may become super expensive, much more risky, and a carbon taboo. Key forests are already dying, such as the pine of the Rocky Mountain states or the maple sugar bushes of the east. Wildfires may roam at will. Am I the doomsayer? No. I bring you the results of science, the latest and best that we have so far. These kind of reports build on a century of measuring air, water, and weather. Now we can draw on satellite eyes, supercomputer networks, and incredible laboratory studies. Now we can see partway into the future. This is Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock. If you're not too busy this weekend or some evening this week, I urge you to read about the future of North America and the places where we will have to struggle hardest to keep our lives in tune with the changing Earth. To get the scientist's report, just Google Working Group 2 and Final Draft, or look on the climate page of our audio on demand menu at ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org. Once you've read it, you may want to make your own plans to help your community adapt and survive well yourself. Open your ears to real alternative radio. Co-op Radio goes back to its big corporate sponsors for more money, commercials, and a list of things not to say.
Not this radio station.
And now for something completely different.
Be the big corporation. Back your own radio station. CFRO 102.7 FM's
New Wrinkles.
Border Radio.
Star Craven. Future Past.
Fortress America.
Special stuff for your head. Keep it on the air. Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. Join us. Have you become a member of CFRO? We really need your support, you know. There's nobody else paying the bills here but you. And I do mean you, the listener of Radio EcoShock. We have a lot of new listeners to Radio EcoShock, I know. And many of you are not yet members of Co-op Radio. And that's what pays the bills and keeps this level of truth and science coming out on the air. Without it and without you, we can't do it. So I'm asking you to seriously pick up the phone now at 604-684-8494. And give me a call or call some of the other people that are waiting to take your call so that we can make you a member of Co-op Radio and you can become part owner of this radio station. That's how it works. And that's how we can give you the straight stuff all through the year without interrupting with commercials or having to appease some corporate sponsors. I mean, if we had the car companies advertising, we wouldn't be telling you half the things that we do about our oil addiction. So that gives us the independence. You make independent media work by your contribution. And when you think about it, we're asking for a few of your lattes over the year. If you buy a regular membership for $50, that's 15 cents a day. You could probably squeeze that out and it would help us pay the bills, pay the rent, pay for the transmission. There are a lot of costs to running a radio station, even though we do it on a bare bones budget. And even though all of our programmers are volunteers. So I myself put countless hours into this. I pay for my own equipment from my home studio and do all the interviews, come down, and, you know, there's all kinds of costs. But I don't mind doing that so long as I know you're helping to keep the station going. So please give me a call at 604-684-8494 and we'll take your membership. There are many options. Perhaps you'd just like to give $10 a month. We'd appreciate that. Perhaps you're feeling a little bit flush and you'd like to get the $100 membership. Well, we'd really appreciate that. And plus, with any of those memberships, you do get a charitable tax receipt if you need it, and that might save you a little bit of money on your taxes when that time comes around. So why give it to the government when you can help support independent media? 684-8494 is the number to call to become a member.
Is that what it is? Quixote.
Is That What It Will Take with Brian Wood. In just a minute, I'm going to play you some clips with some positive solutions from Al Gore and George Monbiot. But before we do that, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to all those who listen through the Internet. I love to listen to radio through the Internet myself, and that's where many of our clips come from for this show. You can do that, incidentally, at www.cooperadio.org. It's actually spelled COOP, C-O-O-P, there's no dash in it, coopradio.org, and just look for the listen page and you'll be tuned right in. And we do have people right now, I know it, listening over the Internet from various parts of the world. You will also find on that page a way to donate online to become a member, and we really appreciate that. So all you have to do there is look for the membership sign up. You'll be able to pay by Visa or MasterCard using the secure server. There's no risk to it, and you really help the station stay on the air. I can't tell you how good it makes us feel to know that people in various parts of the world support this station. When we get a member coming in from the Philippines or from Germany or Scotland, it makes us feel like we're doing something worthwhile, not just for Vancouver, but for the world. So if you're listening by Internet, or if you're listening by Star Choice Satellite on Channel 845, we're also glad to have you as a regular listener. Please keep coming, and please become a member to help us keep coming out to you. And I know some people are listening by cable in British Columbia. We're also available that way. There's a lot of ways to get this program, but none of it can happen unless we have the funding. Now, it's a fairly serious situation for this radio station, every fundraising drive, because we don't have a big amount of money on the bank. We just generally run on what we have. And so if people in the spring fund don't pay for it, well, then we don't really have a radio station. So we are counting on you in particular to have the courage to go online and help us keep going. So you go to www.cooperadio.org and you can pay right there through your browser and you'll end up on a secure server. Various membership options are there. It can cost you $50 for a regular membership. If you're on a fixed income, $25 will do it, and that's not very much money. Even those of us who are on a disability pension can pay that kind of money. And if you have a regular job and are doing all right, we'd appreciate it if you get an Omni membership, which we've set at $102.70 to reflect our station, CFRO 102.7. So that's another great way to support the station. You can also give a gift membership, which we'll send out the four program guides a year to the person that you designate for the gift. It's a great way to give without getting involved in consumerism and buying some item they don't want to sit in a closet. Instead, you can say, we're going to make you an owner of alternative media of CFRO and keep that coming. There's a lot of good reasons to support this radio station. I could go on for a while. I'm not going to. I'm just going to ask you to call 684-8494. That's area code 604-684-8494. If you want to jot that down, 684-8494. Call us now and sign up or go to the Internet at www.cooperadio.org and join us so we can keep on coming with the best news and the best music and the best alternative voices on Co-op Radio CFRO 102.7 FM right here in Vancouver.
This is dedicated to the children, to all the children, to the children who swim beneath the waves of the sea, to those who live in the soil of the earth, to the children of the flowers and the meadows and the trees in the forest, to all those children roam over the land and the winged ones who fly with the wind. To the human children, too. But all the children, they go together into the future in the full diversity of their regional communities.
Climate change? What can we do? Listen.
This Congress should enact a moratorium on the construction of any new coal-fired power plant that is not compatible with carbon capture and sequestration. And that means that we should have an all-out push to develop carbon capture and sequestration. Next, I believe, Mr. Chairman, that just as this committee and the Science and Technology Committee were instrumental in the early years of assisting the scientists and engineers to take what was then known as ARPANET and DARPANET and develop the new switches and the new high-performance computers and assist them in their creation of what became the Internet, I believe that this Congress should develop an electronet, a smart grid. Just as the widely distributed processing of information everywhere in this country and around the world led to the biggest new surge of productivity that we've ever seen in this nation, we ought to have a law that allows homeowners and small business people to put up photovoltaic generators and small windmills and any other new sources of widely distributed generation that they can come up with, and allow them to sell that electricity into the grid without any artificial caps, at a rate that is determined not by a monopsony. Of course, as you know, that's the flip side of a monopoly. You can have the tyranny of a single seller. You can also have the tyranny of a single buyer. And if the utility sets the price, then it'll never get off the ground. But if it's a tariff, if it's regulated according to what the market for electricity is, same way public utility commissions do it now, then you might never need another central station generating plant. In the same way that the Internet took off and stimulated the information revolution, we could see a revolution all across this country with small-scale generation of electricity everywhere. Let people sell it. Don't reserve it for the single big seller.
Al Gore in testimony to the U.S. Congress, March 21st, 2007.
Right now, it's just an idea brought to life by a computer animation. But in 4 years' time, a huge stretch of water out in the Thames estuary should be covered in wind turbines. The claim is that this project, approved this morning by the government, will produce enough electricity to power 1 million homes.
If we start in the housing sector, we see a tremendous potential for energy efficiency. In Germany at the moment, there is a program to take 5% of the entire housing stock every year and to transform it into highly insulated, extremely energy efficient housing. So within 20 years, this government program will ensure that every home in Germany is extremely energy efficient and keeps the heat in. Also in Germany, you find that where new houses are built, there is a standard which is not yet universally applied, but could very well be, which is called the passive house, which requires no heating or cooling system. Now, the winter in Germany gets pretty harsh, pretty well like the Canadian winter. It gets down to about minus 30, minus 35 in the worst case. And yet these passive houses, as they call them, maintain throughout that harsh German winter a constant temperature of 19 degrees centigrade without any active heating system at all. And the trick is as follows. First of all, you build it in such a way that there are no thermal bridges. And what a thermal bridge is conducting material which runs from the inside of the house to the outside of the house, through which heat or cold can be conducted. So in other words, you have a complete thermal envelope around the house of insulation which prevents heat or cold from moving either way. You then ensure that wherever the house is ventilated, it's ventilated through a heat exchanger, so that the warm air going out heats the cold air coming in. The cold air snatches the heat from the warm air as it comes in, and you don't lose heat through that ventilation system. You then get the windows sized exactly to the size of the house and pointing at the right orientation, so that the passive solar gain, the heating from the sun coming through the windows, is sufficient to provide most of the heat that the house requires. And extraordinarily, the rest, the final 2 degrees of that heat, comes from your own body heat. That's all that's required to bring it up to the right temperature. And these houses cost between 7% and 10% more than standard homes. They cost so little more because they don't require heating systems. So you save a great deal on the heating, and you spend some of that money, or slightly more than that money, on building them to a higher standard and with high standards of insulation and the rest.
George Monbiot, author of Heat, How to Stop the Planet Burning.
We have to start from where we are. And if we were to demand the shutdown of the capitalist system and a transformation of human consciousness before we can do any of this, we're not going to get it done. So instead, I propose a simpler idea, a fairer idea, and a self-reinforcing idea. It's not my own idea, but it's the one which I think makes the most sense, and this is a carbon rationing system. In concept, it's very simple. The government says this is what our total emissions for this year should be, and every year it will get lower. And then we divide that total into two blocks, one of 40% of the emissions, the other of 60%. The 40% corresponds to the energy that we use directly when we are buying electricity and gas, when we pay our electricity and gas bills, when we buy gasoline to put in our cars, when we buy plane tickets and train tickets. The other 60%, that's the energy which is used on our behalf by corporations, and that 60% is auctioned off to those corporations by the government, which should do pretty well out of that auction. The 40%, which is that which we use directly, is divided by the number of people in the country, and we all get an equal share of it. And you get a carbon debit card, and every time you pay your natural gas bill or your electricity bill or fill up your tank with gasoline, you hand over your card, and a little bit of your carbon ration gets taken off that card. If you run out before the end of the year, it's not the end of the world for you, but to carry on using energy, you must buy some surplus carbon ration from someone who's used less than their full ration. Because the rich tend to use more energy than the poor, this means that the rich will carry on doing that, but only having transferred a substantial portion of their wealth to the poor. And so we see an inbuilt progressivity in this system. But the other virtue of the system is that people can immediately see that it is fair. In December 1940, at the height of the Blitz in London, George Orwell wrote the following: "The lady in the Rolls-Royce car does more to damage national morale than a fleet of Goering's bomber planes." And what he meant by that was that if you see that the system doesn't apply to everyone, that some people are cheating the system, then you're much less likely to want to participate in that system and believe that that system is going to work for you. But if you see that it applies to everyone, you're much happier staying within those limits. But there's a further advantage of a carbon rationing system, which is as follows. Obviously, people are going to want to keep the lights on. They're going to want to keep their heating on. They're going to want to keep traveling. And they're going to demand the lowest carbon means of doing those things. They're going to demand energy-efficient light bulbs so that they can keep the lights on while using the least possible portion of their carbon ration. They're going to demand low-carbon sources of electricity to power those lights. And you can see that the carbon rationing system starts to kick off the popular enthusiasm for a lot of the other proposals which I'm going to discuss.
I think that our democracy is in trouble. I think our country is in trouble. I think our global civilization is in trouble. But I'm optimistic in spite of that conclusion, because I think that we have faced difficulties in the past, and we have, because of the very nature of the human spirit, found ways to connect with one another and surmount the obstacles, inform one another, and find a way to prevail. And I think that history moves in cycles, and that we... it's darkest before the dawn, and I think that we are due for a renaissance of good decision making.
So we have to have this basic ability to have the aching arm but not throw the light away. We have to have the Schmerzerei. We have to be invested in it. We have to become expert in it. And so that the heart, though broken, clearly when we see these things that disturb us, distress us, anguish us, that the heart is broken open, not broken as in destroyed, but broken open, like an open shell that can hold more than it held before. And this is what consciousness is leading us to, the ability for the heart and the mind to hold more than it held before, and to hold it in a loving light, and in a transformative light, and in a fierce light as well.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Radio EcoShock this week. I'm your host, Alex Smith. I'll be standing by to take your call at 604-684-8494 so that we can get some new members and renew some old members for Radio EcoShock. This show needs your support. We need to show that people are listening and that they do care, but also we need to keep the station going and pay the rent and do all those things that it takes to run a radio station. It's listener-owned and supported. We need you in particular to call 604-684-8494. We'll explain how to become a member. It's cheap. It's easy. It's really worthwhile to support your community radio station and to support Radio EcoShock. Give us a call, 604-684-8494, and we'll see you next week and every Friday at 1 o'clock. Or find us on the web at www.ecoshock.org.
Así celebraban los seguidores del presidente Hugo Chávez tras la proclamación del triunfo del mandatario venezolano en las elecciones presidenciales.
South America rising. After many years of U.S. domination, Latin American countries are asserting themselves. Hear Noam Chomsky on the rise and fall of American domination and a discussion by a group of South American activists on the rise of participatory movements in Latin America. Mark your calendar. Join us Wednesday, April 25th, 12 noon to 2 p.m. for this special radio presentation by Noam Chomsky on the People's Radio Station, CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
The devil is right at home. The devil himself is right in the house. Yesterday, the devil came here, right here, and it smells of sulfur still today.